the Boss Man Show with special guest Desmond Meade, the president, executive director of the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, the FRC, down in Florida. Mr. Meade, let's talk to you today. How's life going for you this great Friday here today?
Well, first of all, man, what's up, Boss Man? Definitely a pleasure to be on your show. And let me tell you, things are happening down here in Florida, and I'm grateful to be a part of a movement, man, that is aimed towards really shifting a lot of conditions in our communities, in this country, and empowering people who have traditionally been left out of the equation.
And Mr. Meade, you all pushed for to get Amendment 4 passed down in Florida and to get returning citizens their right to vote. And this past election was your first time being able to vote yourself. So tell me, how is that for you, knowing all the work you put forward in Amendment 4 and you actually got to Amway Center and go actually cast your vote for the first time in your life there?
Man, let me tell you, I have competing emotions, man, because for on one side, you have my experience, and we'll talk about that. But I also got to point out that there's another competing piece here because, you know, in Georgia, y'all just went through the elections in January, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that the runoffs, there were so many stories that came out of Georgia, returning citizens in Georgia, they got the vote, right, for their first time. And many of them was able to get the inspiration from the work we did here in Florida, right? And so when I get to see, you know, returning citizens across the country, you know, or in other states that are participating and being a part of that process, man, that's huge, man. You know, and it competes with my personal experience because I can tell you, I got into this work not to make it better for me. I got it into this work to make it better for other folks, right? It was always other people that I just put at the top of the list. And so to see the impact that we have across the country was huge. But let me tell you about my personal experience, man. Let me tell you, August of 2020 in our primary elections, I got to vote for the first time in over 30 years. The last time I had voted before that was when I was just graduated high school. I just got my voter registration card and I walked a few blocks from my house and I went to vote and I didn't understand the significance of what I was doing. It was not, you know, it wasn't that important for me. And so years after that, I didn't vote. And then finally, when I did get a felony conviction, I couldn't vote even if I wanted to vote, right? And so it wasn't until I got involved in the work back in 2006 that I really started appreciating the importance of being able to vote. And even then, even working from 2006 all the way up to 2020, I still didn't fully grasp that impact of being able to cast that ballot until I was walking up to the voting location. And I remember as I was walking, I started thinking that I was actually walking for that moment symbolically on hallowed ground. Right. Because my mind went back to my ancestors, man.
Oh, yes.
They were beaten. They were burned. They were hung on trees. They were just outright murdered to prevent them from, number one, registering to vote. And then number two, to actually voting. So we had our ancestors. And I can't stress this enough, man. You know, even in the face of the voter suppression that we're facing today. Right. We had our ancestors that faced almost certain death just to register to vote.
Oh, yes.
And then they had to choose, if they got lucky enough to get through the gauntlet, they had to do it again just to go and vote, right? And, you know, just to put it in perspective, today we can register to vote in the comfort of our own homes in many states, and we can mail in a ballot, right? And so, but as I was walking up to the voting location, I thought about all of those sacrifices being made, blood being shed for democracy. And I thought about all the work that the volunteers put in to pass Amendment 4. And I was like, yeah, man, I'm walking on hallowed ground. And I got in there, man, and they gave me my ballot. And I went into that booth. And that booth was big enough for just me. actually me and God, you know?
Yes, sir.
And as I was, you know, choosing my candidates, I realized that I was engaging in a sacred act, and how that act that I was engaging in by voting actually transcended partisan politics. It transcended the racial biases. You know, 'cause when I was there engaging in this act of voting, I wasn't voting as a Democrat or Republican or Black. Or I was voting as a human being. And yes, the act of voting took me to a place that said something so simple. It said that I am. But that was the most powerful thing it could have said. It almost like it validated my existence as a human being within a society, and that my voice mattered and it made a difference, and that I had a role to play in impacting how my society is governed. Right?
Yes, sir.
That was huge. That was huge, man.
Yes, sir. And after all these years of work, and finally you get to actually see the fruits of your labor after all those years of work, I watched the video and how happy you were, that the joy you had, you broke it down here. Like, I'm happy for you, because I understand that returning citizens are treated like second class citizens. Like, you paid the debt to society. Let them have their rights again. Like, they count returning guys in prison as part of the census, but when they get out, they can't vote, or they won't let them vote inside. But oh, you count them as part of the census population to get money, you know? So that's another story for another day.
And you take our taxes. And you take our taxes, right? Whatever happened to that, with that rallying cry at the Boston Tea Party, there should be no taxation without representation.
Yes.
And, you know, yeah, it's just so much, you know, and we have, you know, and it gets a little complex, because it's been part of that narrative, man, that said that we're not worthy, right? That we're not worthy because we committed a crime, or actually because we got caught, right? Because that's the difference between me and 90% of the people in this country. I'm going to tell you that right now, because we've all done. Matter of fact, let me back up for a minute. In Florida, right? Now, boss man, you have been to Florida.
Yes, right? I have. Many times.
This thing say, You come to Florida on vacation, you probably end up leaving on probation, right?
Yes.
Because listen, in Florida, it's a felony offense if you drive with a suspended license. If you're on the beach, you disturb turtle nesting eggs, that's a felony. You go lobster hunt, you catch a lobster tail too short, that's a felony. You walking from the hotel to Wendy's, and rather than going a long way, you cross this construction site, trespassing on the construction site, felony. And one of my favorites was this brother. I'm gonna say this man. He for Valentine's Day, right? You know, rather than give his girl a dozen roses, what he did was get 12 red balloons. And he released them in the air. That's a felony offense in Florida.
Wow.
So you go into these like memorials with the white balloons, and you want to release the white balloons in the air, or, you know, you got the balloons like happy birthday or congrats grad. And, you know, that's a felony offense in the state of Florida.
Wow.
And so, you know, to think that something as simple as releasing balloons in the air, right, or burning a tire in public, or driving with a suspended license, would cause you to lose the right to vote for the rest of your life, right? It said that you don't matter, your voice don't count, right? And when you have over-policing, particularly in the African-American community,
yes,
that
sir.
Means that there's a significant impact in those African-American communities that diminishes the political capital there. Therefore, politicians don't have to deal with those situations. Now, listen, I don't know how controversial you get on your show, right?
Very.
I'm gonna keep it real.
Very. Right?
That's one of the reasons why when we seen, even when President Barack Obama, when he was elected, right? And you remember they had the shooting in Connecticut, right? Where all of the- Sandy Hook, right? Right, and so we're thinking, oh, you know, that, okay, he's going to address this gun violence thing, right? But he didn't do it in a way that actually addressed the gun violence that we experience in urban communities, right?
Right.
And I remember there were some pastors and that went up to the White House, and at that time Biden was the a vice president, and these pastors being told that there's not enough political capital in the communities to raise those issues, right?
Wow.
And that's being real. And even when President Obama, when he won his second term, I went to that inauguration. I heard the speech and I was there. And I remember being with brothers from all over, whether from Georgia or from Illinois and Philly or whatever. And we were like excited because he started talking about LGBTQ rights. You know, he was going there and we just knew he was going to lift us up. Right. And it was so disappointing because that time he took the oath, swearing on the Bible of Martin Luther King Jr. Right. But it goes back to not having the political capital. Therefore, it's not politically expedient to even lift those issues up.
Oh, yes.
And so this thing that we did with Amendment 4 was the pathway to reverse that trend and to increase political capital in our communities, which now makes us a significant factor, right, in any election, whether, and it's not just presidential, and we got state attorney or DA races,
local
sheriff races,
school
judicial boards. Races, school boards, that now they just cannot, no, they can no longer just blatantly ignore the cries from the African-American community and the fight for reenfranchising people who've been impacted by the criminal justice system is the thing that will take us over the top.
And Mr. Meade, there's these laws I'm hearing to me sound like vote suppression, if you ask me. They're on the books to suppress the votes because we're going to say they're more likely to commit these type of crimes, so we'll keep them off the rolls so we can do what we want to do.
Well, you know, the history, basically, and I think, you know, we could, you know, and I don't want to minimize the advocacy around voter suppression, right? But I do think that we minimize the argument when we limit it to voter suppression. I think it's bigger than that. It's a blatant attack against democracy, right?
Yes.
So when we go back to the roots, you know, we've seen these type of laws. We've seen the emergence of these laws after the slaves were emancipated, right? And so, you know, when you have that slave owner in Georgia, right, that owned that plantation with 200 slaves, right, and it's only 10 family members there, and all of a sudden those 200 slaves got the right to vote, and they're supposed to be equal to you. And you see those slaves actually use the right to vote. And all of a sudden, people, former slaves are being elected into Congress and in commissions and becoming sheriffs or mayors or whatever, right? That's a scary thought to those 10 people who knew for decades they've been abusing those very same people that now have power over them. And so, you know, they had to employ some type of strategy to strip those people of the right to vote. And so while it, you know, in some places you would get, you lose the right to vote for hitting your wife, you wouldn't lose the right to vote for killing your wife, right? Mm-hmm. Because the laws that they were choosing to disenfranchise you with were laws that they would think, or offenses that they would think that the newly freed slaves would be more prone to committing, right? And so you've seen a system that was set up to where if vagrancy, right, if you get caught with vagrancy, if you don't have a good job or whatever, that now you can get arrested, you can get convicted, you can get thrown into jail. And then so you're going to lose your right to vote. So you'll have no more say in that. And now while you in jail, now I could outsource you as prison labor right back into the same fields that you was just liberated from, right? And, you know, and so it's all a part of this big process. And then the other piece is, how do I erect other barriers? Say, okay, well, you've got to pay poll taxes unless, you know, you can show this or that, which a slave, that a person that's recently been emancipated would not be able to show, or a literacy test, which, you know, that you made it a crime to teach a slave to read.
Exactly.
Right. And so you, and then even if that don't work, right? Because we are a resilient people, right?
Very.
Even if that don't work, then we use state sanctioned violence to intimidate you, right? And we know that the state sanctioned violence was, and you talk about the KKK, you know, all of that came out of the slave patrols, right? Which, you know, we know that that has evolved into law enforcement, now the police department.
Oh, yes.
Right. And so all of that you see prevalent because, I mean, even as you know, recent as, I know that there are other incidents, but the ones that I can speak of is in Ferguson, when police officers were patrolling voting locations looking for people with outstanding warrants or something like that, right? So intimidating people from going to the polls. And so that it's all that part of that process. And at the end of the day, you know, yeah, we could say voter suppression, but what I believe is more is bigger than that. It is really a blatant attack against democracy, right?
Yes.
It's a blatant attack against democracy. And it's a handful of people that want to control who gets to vote or who gets to decide who leads their communities or the country. And that's not what democracy is all about.
And it's a shame for Mr. Mead that in Georgia now, due to SB 202, giving someone some water or food is now illegal. You know, we have some people sitting in line for 8-9 hours. I know in the primary in June, it was a rainy day here, Mr. Mead. It was raining, humidity here in Atlanta, Georgia. People standing in line for hours. But the machines didn't work in Fulton and DeKalb County. I wonder why. But they worked in Cobb and Gwinnett County and Douglas County. I wonder why. So it's so obvious what they're doing. Yeah. We just have to keep fighting against it, organizing and mobilizing against it, and try to get our people engaged and inspired to overcome, as our people, I've always done in our life, Mr. Mead, overcome.
Yep, we got the numbers, man. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I never forget, I think it's one of the things that he used to say at the NAACP, and you don't hear much of it now, but the piece that said, we the willing, led by the unknown, doing the impossible for the ungrateful. We've done so much for so long with so little, we're not qualified to do anything with nothing, right? And so, you know, when I tell folks that these laws that we're seeing are designed to pick people off on the fringes, right? And so how do you respond to suppression? Well, to me, I'm a former military guy. Whenever you get an ambush, there's only one way that you have to survive that ambush. If you try to run away from it, you're going to get gunned down. If you freeze, you're going to get gunned down. The only hope you have of surviving an ambush is by attacking the ambush. And so how we respond to suppression is with aggression. If you're going to implement these laws to pick people off at the fringes, all right, so you got this law that's going to knock off 100 voters in my county, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go register 1,000 voters and I'm going to have them come and turn out, right?
Yes, sir.
That's what I'm going to do. And so we just have to keep pushing, bro. You know, because at the end of the day, it's only a handful of people, right? It's only a handful of people, and we speak loudest with our votes.
Yes.
With our votes. You know, I tell folks that when you walk into that voting booth, you have just as much power as the richest person in the world. That's the one equalizer that you can find in this world. You got just as much power as the president of the United States. One man, one vote. And so we just have to utilize it. And when we look at the data, man, our number tells us that we have more than enough to overcome the things that we need to overcome.
And Mr. Mead, I love when you had more than a vote help you all pay off the return assistance fees, because that's another issue too. You get out of prison, you turn back to your life, but you can't pay these outstanding fees. And to me, it's a modern day poll tax. You've already did your time, served your sentence. Now you're on top of that, make me pay all these fees back so I can't vote. So like you said, it's always an extra layer to prevent you from getting to have that sacred moment in that booth. But your organization and More Than a Vote, partnering with you and others who donated, Plants Coalition as well, helped you all pay your assistance fees to get them to have the vote in 2020 and beyond.
Man, More Than a Vote has been like a bomb organization to collab with, man. And I'm going to tell you, yeah, they did that, right? But let me tell you, right, the, you know, they donated a specific amount of money to help people pay off fines and fees. And that's transformative in itself. But they lended, they brought more than just money to the table, right? That was just as impactful, if not more, right? Because remember what I told you, there were some brothers in Georgia that was registered to vote and voted in the runoff, mm-hmm. right? Because they seen what was happening in Florida. And a lot of them, how they seen it was through the collab with More Than a Vote, right? And so, you know, being able to work with Michael Vick, because, you know, Michael Vick, he started his time as a Hawk, right? A Falcon, wasn't it?
Yes, it is. The Dirty Bird. Yes, indeed.
And, you know, he lives in Florida now, and he couldn't vote. And so we were able to connect, you know, and I was personally able to walk Michael Vick through that process. And they decided they wanted to document that, right? And they put that out there about, you know, Michael Vick talking about what voting meant to him and what we were doing to, you know, fight for the rights of returning citizens to vote. And there were people across the country that seen that and got inspired. And there were people that voted because of that. And those numbers far exceeded the amount of people that we were able to pay off fines and fees with the money that More Than a Vote gave us. And so there is like so many ways, you know, that they stood up. Of course, Players Coalition, they did their thing too as well. And so we, you know, at the end of the day, I think it was we was able to show what happens when advocates and athletes can come together, right? That we can do amazing things, and it's not athletes just trying to think that they know what's up and do things on their own, right? It's actually athletes really connecting with grassroots organizations on the ground that's doing that work and saying, how can we be helpful? You know, and that's a beautiful relationship that we enjoy even to this day. And we're looking to expand on it because there's still more people, bro. You know, we just got through celebrating Juneteenth, right? Last year we did Vote Teeth, right? And here's the thing, right? Because the ironic thing was that in the Juneteenth story, was that the slaves in Galveston didn't find out that they were emancipated until 2 years after, right? Yes. And so last year, 2020, it was exactly 2 years after we passed Amendment 4. And there are still hundreds of thousands of returning citizens that don't even know Amendment 4 passed, or much less what it is. There's hundreds of thousands of returning citizens that didn't even know they're free yet, right? And they've been free since 2018. But let's expand this, boss man. There were people living in Georgia and other states that thought that they couldn't vote because they had a felony conviction. Mm-hmm. And there's still people like that. In Georgia, once you do your time, you can vote, right? And there are people that don't know that. And so, you know, when we able to work with organizations like More Than a Vote or sports teams, you know, hopefully we get them Hawks, you know, to do some things with us too as well.
Oh, yes.
Right. But when we're able to work with them, we're able to expand the message or amplify the message and to let people know that they're free. So every day is a Juneteenth for us, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
Every day we let some folks, some brothers and sisters know, hey, brother, sister, you're free. You're actually free. And let me tell you, I've seen it time and time again, that moment that person realized that they're free, how that weight is lifted off of them. But I got to say it. I'm going to shut up. I know you got a question to ask.
No, you're good. But, no, you're good.
Let me share this story. This brother got on Facebook last election cycle, and this is what he said. He said, I got to admit to y'all. He was sitting in his car. He just got through voting. He said, I got to admit to y'all. All these years, I've been watching y'all vote. I've actually been jealous of y'all.
Wow.
And I know what he was feeling, because it was so many of us that during the election season, we'll play it off like, man, my vote don't count. It don't matter. We'll play that stuff off like it don't bother us. But, man, let me tell you, man, being able to participate in an election, right, being able to vote, say that you're a part of something, and when you're not able to vote, you don't feel a part of. And I don't care who you are or how hard you think you are, everybody want to be a part of something.
Yes.
Right? Everybody want to be a part of something. And so this brother was like, yeah, all these years he was jealous. And he finally got the opportunity to vote. He's sitting in his car crying. I'm crying right along with him because, you know, the thing was emotional, you know. Yes. But to know, man, that I know the burden that people have been carrying, and they probably just forgot about it. But the minute that somebody run up on them and say, brother or sister, you free, man. You can vote. That conviction you had 5, 10, 15 years ago, that can't hold you back on this, bro.
Oh, yes.
You can register to vote right now, and you can choose who you want to run your community or whatever. And when they realize that, you actually see the weight lifted off of them and the tears in their eyes and, you know, or the joy, you see that. And so we got many brothers and sisters that still think that they're in felon disenfranchisement slavery. And we need to let them know that they've been emancipated. They've been emancipated.
Most definitely. Speaking of sports, Mr. Meade, tell us about your late super Stan Van Gundy. He's a great dude. Coach Van Gundy's always been one to be for the us and our people, and being out, going to prisons and again teaching in prisons and helping and got behind your Amendment 4 early. So tell us about the relationship with Coach Van Gundy.
Wow, man. Let me tell you something, man. Coach Van Gundy, man, is, you know, to me, he's a beacon of hope, man. You know, sometimes in this society, you can get, you know, call the person, get so jaded, man, you know, especially when you talk about the white black thing and white privilege and this and that, you know, and I mean, some of this rhetoric would have you scared to talk to white folks, right? But let me tell you, Van Gundy, for years we have known him. For years he's been supportive of not only our efforts, man, but any effort that promotes social justice and, you know, and ending racial disparities and stuff like that, man. He's a guy that he puts his money where his mouth is. He puts his time where his mouth is, you know, and he always shows up, man, in just so many different ways. And so I look at him as a beacon of hope because, you know, he's a good emissary, man, that shows, man, that listen, that we can come together along racial lines and actually be effective and move something and accomplish some things and move issues that people would thought was impossible. Van Gundy was in from almost the very beginning with Amendment 4, you know, when other experts thought that Amendment 4 was a waste of time or whatever, Van Gundy was like, no, I'm with this. This is the right thing to do. And he showed up, and whenever we called, he was there, you know? And so there's mad props to Coach Van Gundy, because I think he gets it, man. He gets it. And what I love the most about it in that aspect is the fact that even he gets it with the understanding that he doesn't know everything, right? Mm-hmm. And he knows his role. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I guess as a coach, I guess you should do that, right? Because, you know, listen, you can't have the shooting guard trying to be, you know, work outside their lane.
Yes,
that's going to mess the whole team up. Everybody got to know their role on the team. And if I guess because he coaches that so much, he knows his role. And even in the advocacy world, he knows the lane that he's supposed to be in. And he's very clear with that. And he shows up in a powerful way.
And last one I got for you, Steve Clifford, on that on coaching athletes part, because I know I asked some questions about you before doing pre-freaking conferences. He talked about how you talked to the team about the issues and the guys reach out to you and he reaches out to you. Tell us about your relationship with Coach Clifford and your Orlando Magic, how you all work together as well.
Yeah, so so I got one complaint against Coach Clifford. He didn't have me come back enough, right? Because I don't know if he told you. The one time he had me speak, it was before, it was the game that they won in the playoff, right? And he was supposed to bring me back. I said, listen, you don't break the trend, man. You know, I'm a little superstitious. Let me come back and talk to the guys. We win more games, right? But nah, let me tell you, seriously, Coach Clifford, man, when I think of him, when I hear his name, I see his face, you know, the word that pops out to me more than anything else is love. Man, that dude got some genuine love for folks, man. He don't care about the color of your skin, your political preference, none of that. He just loves people, man. And then he got a extra weak spot for the kids. You know, I just see so much compassion and empathy and love that just pours out of this brother, man. And I call you white, but I call him a brother, man, because you remember, just because you my color don't make you my kind, right?
Exactly.
And that's a real brother, man. I'm telling you, I got to give him mad props. I don't know what he did in his past life or prior to meeting him, but what I know is that from the first moment that I met him, he had a love for the community, and it was because of him that we have formed a strong bond with Orlando Magic here in Florida. And you know, and he was very clear from the start. I don't want to engage in some superficial stuff. I want to get down and deep into the issues that are impacting the communities. And I want to be an ally. I want to be an ally to the folks, to the organizations that don't get the attention, but they're doing the work. You know what I'm saying? And I want to be able to try to support that any way I can. And he's that's the type of man that he's always showed me that he is. And I'm really appreciative of him. I mean, my whole family loves him. But between, I'm telling you, there's this competition between Coach Van Gundy and Coach Clifford, because the family crazy about all of them. And so we're trying to figure who gets most props, man. And right now they neck and neck, man.
You get there, right? You know what I'll tell you? I'll tell you honestly, as a kid, you know, I grew up here with the Hawks. I was a Magic fan. I loved Shaq and Penny Hardaway when I was a kid. So because the Hawks wasn't as good as they were now. So back when I was younger, I was cheering for Shaq and Penny Hardaway. So I have some Magic gear in my old closet. I have some Magic gear still to this day.
Really? Wow, yeah. we actually, I got some Magic shirts now. And one of the things that they partnered up with us real quick on was how do we use ball players to get people more engaged around voting and get them to be more excited about it? And we came up with this slogan: get off the bench and get in the game. Right? Vote. You know, that at the end of the, as a matter of fact, you're seeing this stuff play out even right now in the playoffs. And I talked to them about it. You know, about when the Heat was winning their championships, that, you know, you got your superstars on the squad. You know, you got them. But guess what? One thing we know, that they could either get in foul trouble, that they could get tired, right? Or they can get hurt. But at some point, these superstars are going to come out of the game. And when they come out, the bench got to come in. And the bench got to at least maintain status quo. Or, you know what I'm saying, but you don't want the lead to widen when the bench is in the game, right? And so if the bench could just maintain the lead or even maintain the deficit and give the starters time to come back in there and then try to make a final run to take them over the top, that's good. Now, if the bench could even lessen the deficit, right, or expand the lead, that's even better.
Even better.
The team that goes, like, the furthest is the ones whose bench – can step up in crunch time and deliver. And the whole thing was that in this game of life, right, there's two groups of people that's getting in the game no matter what, right? And they're going to be returning citizens, right? Because 95% of people who are locked up, they're getting released back into our community. And then our young folks, right, as they're coming up out of high school, they're getting in the game whether we like it or not. And so if we want to win that championship, we got to make sure that our players that's coming off the bench are prepared to be successful as possible, right? And so that was part of the thing behind get off the bench and get in the game, right? That you just can't sit on the sideline and complain about what's going on. You may know you got to go ahead and get in this game, right? And we want to fight to make sure that when you're trying to get in the game, that you're prepared as possible so you can do your thing. And that bench is going to be key.
I'm asking you about this, Mr. Meade. I'm fighting against the FDC about the ban on mail coming to the jails. I feel like the inmates need that from their families and friends to give them hope. That's the way to the outside world. You're going to ban physical mail? I don't understand why they would do that. And if the FDC there,
you know, let me tell you, it's already been proven. right? That if there's a bond between a person who is incarcerated and their family on the outside, that leads to successful reintegration and, of course, reduced recidivism. You know, one of the things, I got a partner of mine, Marcus Bullock, based out of D.C. He started this company called Flick Shop. And Flick Shop, what it does, it's like the Instagram for prisons. And it allows family members to take like selfies and have them delivered to their loved ones as postcards, right? Part of that process was the experience that he had when he went into prison as a juvenile. And the only thing that kept him there, or the main thing that kept helped him to survive, was the fact that his mother made a commitment to write him, I think like every week or every day. Right. And so to be able to have that connection, and research has showed this. And so for FTC or any other entity to engage in the practice of trying to reduce that, it runs in contradict, it contradicts what they're, if you're about safety, right? And if you're about successful rehabilitation, successful reentry, if you're about that, then you should not be engaging in things that would increase the likelihood of a person committing more crime and not being able to successfully reintegrate back into the community. So that right there, you know, to me personally, I would just look at the money. I follow the money trail, because anytime I see things that don't make sense, mm-hmm. right? If there's not a political angle to it, there's a financial angle to it, right? And so you just follow the money. Just follow the money, and you will know why folks are doing what they're doing.
I got two more for you. How are you all going to go about trying to transform this parole and probation system? Because I feel like it's set up against us. If you make one slight error, you back inside.
Man, you hitting all of the topics, man. And so one of the things that Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, man, we got some key partnerships, right? You know, you already talked about the Players Coalition. You already talked about More Than a Vote, but we also got a partnership with Reform Alliance, right? And Reform Alliance is the organization that was pretty much spearheaded by the Meek Mill incident, right? Where Meek Mill was on probation forever and a day, and then Jay-Z and Robert Kraft and a few other folks, Mike Novogratz with Galaxy Gives, they all came together and said, no, we're going to do something about it. We're going to address this thing about parole. And so they've been on a much broader national scale. They've been really leading those efforts. And we've been partnering with them on that, because and some of the things that we're doing now, we have a campaign called Give Life Back, right? Coming out of Reform Alliance. And it's highlighting the fact that people were being violated for doing some natural things that everybody else would do, right? You getting violated for going to work, you know what I'm saying? You getting violated. One person, because of a hurricane, their house was destroyed. They had to move to another house because they didn't get permission. They got violated, right? Got violated for going to get prescription medicine. Their daughter was sick, and they had to go get some medicine. Oh, you left the house after hours, after curfew. Man, my daughter was sick, but that doesn't matter. You violated, right? And so there's so many stories that exposes the flaws of this probation system, and we're working hard to try to number one, raise awareness, right? Because it's very important. Trust me, because here's the deal. Let me back up for a second. You know, when you seen the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, right? When the United States dropped the atomic bomb on these two Japanese cities, one of the key things was that before they did that, they had to engage in a propaganda campaign that painted the Japanese people as dangerous, scary, right? People that was a threat to the American people. And they did it in such a way that's so powerful that when the United States dropped the bomb that killed hundreds of thousands of innocent women and children and men, rather than they be outraged, there was a celebration. Just think about that. That people were actually celebrating the murder of innocent women and children, right? But that's the power of a narrative. And that narrative that says that we were dangerous and violent and all kinds of stuff, right? And it gives us these labels that we're felons and convicts. All of those things are designed to do two things, and that is to dehumanize us, mm-hmm. right? And to desensitize that person towards our plight. And so you're not concerned about how people are getting treated in prison, because those are dangerous criminals anyhow. They don't deserve anything, man. I mean, there was a time when people said, why the hell do they have TVs there? They shouldn't even have a TV. Shoot, I can't afford cable. Why should they watch TV, right? They're criminals. And that attitude created an environment where, like, we know, we talk about this George Floyd and all this, and this stuff is happening years and years and years and years and years ago.
Exactly. Right?
But if a person with a record is saying that the police is doing something wrong, who gonna believe the person with a record? Because you're a criminal. You're not worthy of being trusted and all this kind of stuff, right? And even the NAACP and the ACLU, they weren't trying to take up our cases because we weren't the perfect victim. You know what I'm saying? And let's just be real. So this stuff has been in our community growing and growing. Probation, all this is tough on crime, no strikes, three strikes, you're out, no child left behind. All of that stuff comes out of this narrative. And we've seen it reinforced in the 94 crime bill that created a lot of these policies that did nothing but destroy our communities and tear our families apart. And guess what? Society was no less safer, right?
Correct.
And so part of this process is, how are we rolling back that narrative, right? Because before I can get you to put pressure on a senator or elected official to revise probation policies, I first got to have you understand that the people that are suffering are worthy to be treated humanely, right?
Right.
And the people that are impacted by that, right, deserve to be treated with dignity and respect. And their families, who also bear the impact of that, deserves better than that, right? And so when I get you to that point, when I get you to not look at me as a no good person that, you know, you don't care what matters to them, and see me as, wow, you know, Desmond, that's time 100. You know what I'm saying? That, well, he went from a crackhead and homeless and having all these convictions to being one of the 100 most influential people in the world. So he can do something positive. He do have something to give, right? So understanding that those people that are incarcerated are human beings that have the potential to be contributing members of our community, and they have something to offer, not only for our communities, but their families, can now make me want to say, okay, you know what? That stuff right there, it don't make no sense. It ain't right. Let's change it.
Yes, and the last one I got for you, this is kind of personal for you as well. The Florida process for clemency. And I know you went before that board last year and it didn't go the way we wanted it to go. Now it's a new process in Florida. Tell us about that. And I also saw you partnering with the Biden administration about trying to have on the federal level, getting a pardon basis there for those guys as well, a pardon plan on that level. So talk about all those things, Mr. Meade, that felicitous out here in Georgia and beyond.
Boss man, I'm number one, I'm impressed, but slightly hurt, right? That you did that research, you got all this intel on me, right? So I'm waiting for you to ask me about my book.
I was going to do that a bonus too. I was looking at the time, but I got you in the book too.
Yeah, but seriously, one of the reasons why we did start the Amendment for campaign was because we knew that the clemency system was flawed, right? It was flawed. You had four politicians that decided which American citizen get to vote and which don't get to vote, and they didn't even have a criteria. There was no set standard. So the decisions were pure arbitrary, right? And we've seen the abuses of it, right? In one case, you would see in 4 years, over 155,000 people were able to get their rights restored. And then the next governor comes in, and in 8 years, less than 5,000 people were able to get their rights restored. And you see cases where African-American man or woman that's done amazing work or whatever, turned their lives around, went and said, "Governor, would you give me my rights?" And the governor said, "Denied." Matter of fact, before he said denied, he said, "Oh, my God, you did an amazing job turning your life around. Very proud of you." Denied, right? And then you'll see immediately after that, a white person would come up and didn't do nothing but say, "Governor, if I had my rights, I'll vote for you." Granted, you know what I'm saying? Then they rights get, what kind of stuff is that, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, full politicians should not have that much power to determine who get the vote and who don't get the vote. This same scenario played out when I went to appear before the clemency board to get a pardon, right? And the thing about pardon or clemencies is that it's based on what you've done after you have committed your crime, right? What have you done after you have served your time, paid your debt back to society? Well, bro, I mean, my record speaks for itself. My work was so impactful that I was named Floridian of the Year, Central Floridian of the Year. And then Time Magazine said I was one of the 100 most influential people in the world, and had everybody from Jesus Christ all the way to Michael Jackson writing me a letter of recommendation. So it's all there, yet I still get denied, right? Mm-hmm. And so it ain't, you know, right then tells you it's not about what you've done, right? It's about something else, if anything at all. But, you know, so it was very disappointing, because if me, who've done all these things, can't even get not even locked down for a pardon, what it says about the average guy who, you know, he did his time, he served his time, and he moved on with his life, you know, probably started his own company or whatever, provided for his family, being an amazing dad, amazing community member, and he can't get his rights restored, or he can't, you know what I'm saying, get a pardon, you know? And so it is an extremely flawed system. And then even on the federal level, it's a mess. It's a mess. You know, at the end of the day, it's too doggone complicated. And so I'm hoping that we could do some work with the Biden administration to revise that, you know, and create a more streamlined process and a more fair process that would allow people to get some form of clemency from the president in the years to come.
And last, that's really true, is last one, the bonuses. Tell us people how to get your book and let my people vote, and what inspired you to write this book. And I tell you what, it's very powerful. So people should get the book.
Let my people vote. Yes. Let my people vote. All you got to do is Google it, Amazon.com, or you can go to DesmondMead.com, DesmondMead.com. To order my book, and it's an audio version as well, and it's my voice you're gonna hear. It's not gonna be any robot or some strange man or woman reading my book. It's gonna be me. My wife made me do it. But you know, I wrote it for the same reason I had fussed at Time Magazine folks, right? Because that year that I made the list, they had The Rock on the cover.
Wow.
Right. And I was like, how the hell y'all gonna have The Rock on the cover of this, right? I mean, y'all should have had me on the cover, right? And the reason why I said that, right, because here's the thing, right? And this is what this book is, or one of the purposes of this book, is to let folks know, man, that you don't have to be a movie star or an athlete or a billionaire to have an impact in your community, your country, or even the world.
Yes.
Right? That, man, look at that guy, Desmond. He was a crackhead. He was homeless. He had a rap sheet a mile long. If this guy who was standing in front of railroad tracks in 2005, waiting on a train to come so he could jump in front of it, if this guy there, if he could turn his life around and influence the world, then what does that say that I can do? And people need to know that in spite of the obstacles that they may be facing in life, in spite of the things that they may have done in the past that may have caused them shame or disappointment, in spite of all of that, right, that there is a pathway to take all of that stuff and do a Lauryn Hill and turn a negative into a positive and be an impact in your community, in this country, in the world. And they have real life proof that that can happen. And that's what this book is about, right? Showing people that no matter where you are in life right now, you know what I'm saying? That you can make a difference. You can be something real special.
Yes, sir. Mr. Mead, it's been an honor to talk to you. I've been a fan of yours from afar. Happy to make this happen. When I come down to Florida this summer here to hang out and make sure we connect, I can come see you. Because I come to Tampa, Orlando, Miami, and my guy friend in Mariana, close to at Chipola. So I make all my rounds from the Panhandle all the way down to Miami. I make my rounds when I come down to Florida.
Well, you know what? Hey, please hit me up when you do. And then I hit you up when I come to Atlanta, because I know it's amazing organizations in Atlanta that's led by returning citizens, man. And listen, I'm excited to really link up with folks in Atlanta and keep on building, man. You know, we got some success in the runoff, but you don't stop now. You got to keep grinding.
Yes, sir. Because,
trust me, I tell folks this, right? I remember when people were like, why should I vote? Or why you think my vote is important? I said, listen, you might not realize how important your vote is, but let me tell you this. If it wasn't valuable, there wouldn't be so many people trying so hard to stop you from voting.
Amen.
That in itself will tell you that. And so you've seen the response. What we've seen, right, with the voter suppression laws is a direct response to the work that, so you must, y'all must have did something good, right?
Yes.
And so they coming at it. So that means you got to grind even harder, right? You got to grind even harder, man. We can't get back-to-back titles unless we grind it. Just because we won year one, that don't mean you're going to ask Steph. You got to up your game, man. You got to up your game. So, hey, I'm down. I'm ready, willing, and able. You know, y'all are neighbors anyhow, you know. And listen, you come down, we can link up. I come up, I definitely want to link up with you, other returning citizens. Enjoy.
Yes, sir.
Especially in the ATL area.
Ferg says, there's a meeting here on the Boss Man Show. Check this out, bossmanshow.com.